You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz.
Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for Monday, December 4th, a jam-packed show, because I owe you one, frankly. We'll review the Friday game against the New Orleans Pelicans. Donovan! Rudy Gobert, is he set to return, and what does it mean in a Monday NBA 5? It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. So glad to be with you today. And I am, because I wasn't with you Friday, and that sucked. I got food poisoning on Friday. I did the DJ and PK show in the morning and almost didn't make it through that. And then never had a 20-minute window for the next 6 hours in which I could, maybe 5 hours, in which I was able to do anything other than go visit the porcelain god, and I could not get the show out. So I apologize to that, and you guys, I'm sure, survived just fine. So let's dig in. Today's show is jam-packed. Our good friends at Stop the Flow are involved as they are right now. StopTheFlow.org, SlowTheFlow.org. I get optimistic on what we are able to do, but visit SlowTheFlow.org for ways to find out how you can reduce water usage. And some of them are really, really easy. We can all save water. We can reduce water usage by 25% by 2025 if we do it correctly. Also brought to you by Murdoch Chevy, the good people, Tyson and the crew over in Woods Cross, MurdochChev.com, as well as by the Advocates. So thank you very much for tuning in. Let's dig right in and start on, we didn't have a game this weekend, so let's dig into Friday. And we'll take a look at some of the numbers on Friday, and really the 41 is the number you want to talk about. And we'll do that in a second segment. But I want to make sure that we discuss the 24 and the 18, 11, and 5 and some other things as well. So just numbers-wise, it was a fairly high-paced game for us, about 96 possessions. We averaged about our average. So we were able to play the game at our pace. The offensive rating, again, was just unbelievable. 119. League average is 105 right now. 106. Best in the league is 110. Over the last 11 games, we're the second-best offensive team in the league. And again, the assist number at 25, despite Donovan doing a lot of one-on-one stuff. 57% effective field goal percentage. Got to the line 25 times, largely because of Donovan. We got to the line 11 times. We didn't force turnovers that night, so we did not have a good defensive night. The Pelicans were on fire. The Pelicans, not a great shooting team, hit 15 of 30. What's incredible about the win Friday night by the Jazz is they won on a night where the other team was having a make night. I mean, and Matt kept saying it during the broadcast, tip of the hat to Matt Harpering, Craig Bowler-Jack, Kristen Kenny on the front line, to Travis Henderson, Scott Rogers, Jeremy Brunner on the back end, and many others involved that I don't get. I watch the games a lot, usually volume off, usually kind of replaying or watching portions or snippets. And I was in and out, quite frankly. So if they made terrible mistakes, I might have faded out for a minute. But really, tip of the hat to them. That's a great broadcast. I watch a ton of broadcasts around the NBA. Their broadcast is just better, more solid, complete. We should be really, really, really thankful to what we have out of them, because that's a great broadcast. And Matt kept saying it, wow, you know, they're having a make night. And by the way, tip of the hat to them also on the use of advanced analytics. I was watching football last night. They're using passer rating. None of us have any idea what passer rating is. There's just no way to know. But we know it's a better metric to explain what's going on. And that way, we understand it. And NBC tells us the average and moves and then gives us what relevance it was at Carson Wentz on third downs. Passer rating is what it was. And we get the story. And they're doing the exact same thing and being ahead of the game, where a lot of people are very reticent to that change. But New Orleans made 27 of 54 open looks. They had 50% of their open looks. The Jazz hit 51%. Jazz had an incredible shooting night as well, other than Rubio that was 0 for 5. So that was a shoot-it-out game, and the Jazz found a way to win it, which, honestly, I didn't know that the Jazz could win games like that when the year started. This has been quite a stretch to get to be 12 and 11 and having won 5 straight and going 7-4 in games that Rudy missed. It's really something. And then the continued player development is just remarkable. And in this case, Alec Burks is the story. AB, 10 of 17, 1 of 5 from 3. I don't care. I love the fact that he took 5 threes. You know, as much as I'm applauding him regularly and mean it with all truthfulness that he is not diving by the basket, not the 5-on-4 fast break the other way. None of those kind of things are taking place, which is great. You also don't want to become a mid-range marvel, right? Like you've got to make sure that at some point in the process you're not just becoming a low percentage shot. That floater that he's taking, which I do like, is not the easiest shot there is in the world. And he took 6 mid-range shots the other night, making 5 of the 6, which is a pretty unsustainable model. But it's so much better than what we've seen out of him in the past. And he's playing under control. He's playing with a wide base. I've talked about this. He and Jeff Watkinson, the assistant coach, have been working on widening his base and choppier steps so that then he can make a move and react off of that. If you think of Alec, you think of that tall, high, rhythmic thing, but he can't do anything off of that. And he can't control himself or stop. There were 2 plays where you saw him get to the basket the other night where off of that he was able to beat someone, and that's going to start happening more and more. He's going to get back to going to the basket, and I think he'll start going to the free throw line more if he continues to use this method of playing, and he can stay inside of this, which is really going to be the key. We talked to him yesterday. The interview's available at LockedOnJazz.net. He downplayed it and wouldn't talk about it, which I'm going to assume is just AB not really wanting to talk about what's going on. It was actually a little disconcerting to me that, like, oh, I'm just playing, but you're not. You're playing very, very differently than you've ever played before, and I would like it more if you would express that and say that to me. Then I would have a greater confidence that it would continue. Derek Favors and DeMarcus Cousins have been battling each other since high school. Favors was the top center out of Atlanta. Cousins was also in the South, and I think Alabama, and the top center there. They've played each other forever, and frankly, Derek Favors kicks the crap out of DeMarcus Cousins, and he annihilated him again the other night. And this is taking it back to then Favors being at Favors' full level. Because if you go back to the end of the 15-16 season, Favors had a stretch there where he went to New Orleans and dominated Anthony Davis. He went to Sacramento and dominated DeMarcus Cousins. And he was better than these guys. He was getting up for those games, playing with a fervor and a dominance that, frankly, we didn't see last year. And I think it sometimes has both been injury elements, and I do think there is a level of, you know, if somebody else has taken your role. He had 28, 11, 3, and 6 on March 5th of 2016 against New Orleans, and then promptly did the same thing against DeMarcus shortly thereafter. I think an interesting question is going to be what happens on with Derek here, but engagement level. There, Jeff Hornacek used to talk about how when he drove to the arena and in the prime heyday, he knew if I don't have a good game, we lose. And that he had a level in which he played at that. And that there was a day along the way where he was playing off the bench where he suddenly realized he was just driving to the arena to play without that same pressure to win and or to play well because he thought he would, you know, cost his team the game. And that in many ways was kind of when he decided to retire. And I think there's something worth kind of keeping an eye on Derek with that. He has been going to the arena for the last 11 games, knowing if I don't play well, and frankly, he doesn't play well in Brooklyn, against Brooklyn, plays really badly, and we lose. And since then has been exquisite. And I wonder whether or not that can be replicated when Rudy's back. And I think that's a huge question. By the way, that other game was March 13th. Derek had 28, 14, and 4 with 3 steals against DeMarcus. And then the other night, 18 points, 11 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals, guarding DeMarcus one-on-one, forcing him into an 8 of 21 night. But more than anything else, what jumped out to me about Faves that night was every time they were in the backcourt and all of a sudden Cousins hadn't run all the way back, Faves just jumped on it. I mean, jumped on it. And outran Cousins and created plays for everybody. The other one that jumped out to me on Faves and how great he's been offense, how quickly and with what urgency he's run into setting picks. And that to me is a little bit of the sign of when he's really engaged. When he kind of meanders up to set the pick, it doesn't, compared to that, he really was putting pressure on the defense with speed. This all may be a health thing. But I also think there's just a level of feeling as though you are a major important piece of the puzzle. And I think he lost that, understandably, with what's been going on with Rudy's emergence. I will talk about Donovan in a second. But I do want to tell you that if you're looking for success in an NBA player, you're looking at their PER, their player efficiency rating, right? John Stockton's PER, 21.8. Malone, 23.9. Let me introduce you to what the people at Slow the Flow want me to talk about. Water efficiency rating, WER. It is a clear way to boost your rating through small, easy changes around the house. So if you install a low-flow toilet, you'll save 0.3 gallons per flush, which doesn't sound like a lot, but flushes add up. They certainly do when you have food poisoning. If we installed that low-flow toilet, we would have saved 0.3 times 20 flushes over like a six-hour period of time. Okay, that's a little gross in the morning. My bad! Another way to boost your rating is by taking showers instead of baths, keeping them under 5 minutes. And with a five-minute shower, use 12 to 22 gallons of water. A full tub uses 70 gallons of water. Little by little, small changes that do not impact you at all. Look at what you can do to your WER. You can turn yourself to a WER all-star. In fact, if you keep it up, Slow the Flow people will build a statue right outside their offices with you. WER champ. Maybe not, but the idea is there. Head to slowtheflow.org. Slow the Flow. Save H2O. All right, let's talk Donovan Mitchell. Just incredible. I had been saying for some time, and it's interesting, I will admit, and maybe we're going to lose this after that 41-point game, there has been kind of two levels of conversations about Donovan Mitchell. There has been the conversation you will have off the air with Ron Boone or with one of the TV guys, Scott Rogers or Jeremy or Travis or whomever, about what you think he might be capable of doing that you don't really want to say publicly, and then there's the part you say on the air. So I don't actually remember if I had said this in the podcast. But the thought I had on Donovan is that he was getting to the point where he's easily going to average 20. And then I said, you know, if he jumps his free throw rate from like 3 a game to 8 a game, which is a big jump, you know, now all of a sudden he's a 25-point-a-game scorer. And, you know, now we have Damian Lillard. And then if he goes a little further, you have Dwayne Wade, the scoring champ. I mean, those were the comments that you're seeing out of this 21-year-old kid in his first 20 games, which is just ridiculous. And then he just blew it out of the water. He went to the free throw line 11 times. He took 25 shots. Only 2 of them were in the mid-range. His shot chart for that night is almost exclusively, all but 2 shots, not almost exclusively, all but 2 shots are either at the rim or are 3-point shots. They ruled a third one, I'm looking at the shot chart, they ruled a third one kind of outside. But it's a little bit of a stretch to actually say that on the right side that he did that. So 7 of 9 at the rim, 0 for 1 in the paint, 0 for 3 mid-range, and then 6 of 12 from 3. And frankly, I went and watched all the videos of his 25 shot attempts, and the one that we're talking about is not. I would count almost all 11 of them as shots that are exactly where you'd want them. The shot plot on that shot chart, to me, has two shots that are mid-range shots the whole game. One of them is a three where he sticks his foot in, and he wanted to be a three. He was kind of diving, trying to get a foul, didn't get it. It's James Harden-esque shot chart. And, you know, this is what – there's wacky, crazy thoughts you can have. I'm still reticent to go there. I mean, like, oh, he's Dwayne Wade with a jump shot. Like, I've said it. I'm not going to lie to you. I have said it to people. I've said it to people in the NBA. It's absurd, ridiculous comments. There's more that I like about him, about his mindset, his off-the-court stuff that is what excites me the most. He missed 7 of 8 shots from the 6-minute mark of the first quarter to the end of the first half. He missed 6 of 8 shots and then did not take a shot for the opening 4 minutes of the third quarter and let the game come back to him in a manner that showed a maturity and a guile and that is just unprecedented. His growth mindset, his maturity, his upbringing, his savvy is what jumps out about him more than anything else. Every single coach we have talked to has talked about how this is the kid. This kid is the most impressive interview that they've ever seen and that they've ever had. And I can't imagine that anything else is true, frankly. He is absolutely remarkable in all of his interactions. It's just truly, truly, truly amazing in how he holds himself. And the play everyone was talking about yesterday, I wrote about it, LockedOnJazz.net, was the pass. He throws a pass to Ingles to give the Jazz the lead. And as one scout in the league said to me, he just scored 41 without being a pig. And that is truly incredible. That is what jumps out to me more than any other aspect, is he's doing it within the game. His teammates adore him. I was there with Flip Murray. I've talked about it when his teammates basically went to the coaching staff and said, I don't care if he's scoring, we can't play with him anymore. This kid's doing the exact opposite. The range of shots he's taking, from off the bounce threes to catch and shoot threes to one-footed drives to two into the basket, is out of this world. His development, he started the year, when he started, he could not make shots at the rim. He only made 6 of his first 17 shots at the rim. Since then, he's made 60%. That's a crazy high number for a 6'3" guard. He started 3 of 16 on above-the-break threes. He has since hit 37% of those. Rookies don't make these adjustments in this time period. This is unprecedented for anything I've seen out of anything but the best of the players. His catch-and-shoot three is 42%. His off-the-bounce three is 33%. He's still better, but the off-the-bounce three is a hard shot. And the fact that he's kind of there and taking it at the rate he is, it's frankly, it's very Damian Lillard-esque. The comparisons are absurd at this stage, but he's leaving us no choice but to talk about him in the realm of these players. And I think that the two things that are most encouraging have nothing to do with basketball. His mindset and work. His mindset, his work, his demeanor. He's either totally full of it or says all the right things. And then I'd say the last and final one that might be, you know, the one that jumps out to me is how much his teammates like him. You know, here's a rookie that's coming in taking the most shots on this team, 15 shots a game, and no one has any problem with it at all. who's spraying water bottles on his teammates when, after games, pretty presumptuous of a rookie, and when asked about it, says, you know what, they're going to popcorn my car anyway, what's the difference? At least we're having some fun. And then when he scores 41, they go get him. Now they're all having fun together. It's incredible, and it's worth just, I'm all in. I've been all in the whole time. I was there the day they threatened to fire us. If we mentioned it, I'm all in. And I'm sure there's going to be some growing pains. I'm just not sure what they are. He's just that remarkable. And it really blows me away. If you're looking for the awesome holiday venture that you're going to do something that just blows somebody away, head over to Murdoch Chevy. Tyson and the crew in Woods Cross. There's also a Murdoch Chevy in Logan. They have got incredible deals for you and amazing product for you. I am driving a truck for the first time in my life. And let me tell you what, all these tough guys in their cowboy boots and their big honking trucks and acting like they're all tough have fooled you all. These are luxury vehicles. I'm driving the Chevy Silverado right now, which is one of the – Chevy has every truck line covered, which is the unique thing about Chevy right now, is this is the most comfortable, smooth ride out there. There's the heavy-duty Silverado HD, which has the amazing Allison transmission. There's the Colorado truck. There's the light-duty half-ton Silverado. And that midsize Colorado I just mentioned. So Chevy also has this Colorado diesel. They're all done with a unibody frame. It's safer. It's one frame. It is all three truck segments. Chevy has them all covered. They're the only ones who are doing that. And I am driving the Chevy Silverado right now. And, all right, we can all laugh. Like, nerd geek boy with all of his numbers sitting up there in his big truck. But the fact is, it's like a luxury drive. The kids want to beat it every single time. Obviously, all the throw the stuff in the back. We figured it out. Utah people figured this out a long time ago with all the amount of trucks are on the road. And I'm guessing that not everybody's a mud-slinging cowboy out there that's driving their trucks around. It has been awesome. More importantly, it's the Murdoch experience that you get whenever you stop by, and you get the same over at Murdoch Chevy with the 5-day exchange policy, price match guarantee, safety inspections for life, car washes for life. That's who the Murdochs are. You know the Murdochs. This is an auto group you can trust. Find new roads at Murdoch Chevy in Logan and in Linden. Get started at MurdochChev.com. Rudy Gobert practiced yesterday, and I am expecting him to play. He's questionable. But the only and I will say this, if he doesn't go today, I don't have any medical science on that. I know Rudy. I think he would be impossible to keep out if he's practiced and felt good. Maybe he didn't feel good. If he doesn't, here's the tricky one, by the way. And this is the tricky one about getting Gobert back. So we play tonight here home. Tuesday, we're in Oklahoma City. Wednesday, we come back. You don't practice after a back-to-back. You play Thursday at home. Friday, we fly to Milwaukee. So you might kind of practice that day, but we also just played 3 games in 4 nights. So you're probably not practicing on Friday, and you're flying. Saturday, we play Milwaukee. Sunday is usually an off day. Our next practice day is Monday, December 11th. So if Rudy did not come through yesterday feeling good, I wouldn't be surprised if either, I mean, this is really where you could use the G League to get him a game, right? Or December 11th is the next practice day. Rudy went 5-on-5 yesterday. It sounds like from everything Donovan and Alec and said about things. Quinn didn't really reveal much, but Donovan talked about how well he was getting back defensively, a good wind he had, and how much he was talking. So I'm assuming that there was something close to 10 guys on the floor there at that point for that comment to be made by Donovan. Looking across the gym, I did see that he was wearing a brace on that knee, which you would anticipate, but it's going to be great to have him back. The impact is going to be whether the ball still moves. Rudy actually has a tendency to be a little bit of a ball stopper. He gets the ball, holds it, wants to hand it off, do all those things. He's going to have to keep swinging it. Favors has been unbelievable at swinging it and moving it and keeping it going. I would suspect there's a minutes limitation on Rudy early, and so you probably start both Rudy and Derek, and then maybe this time your first substitution out is Rudy, and Rudy almost plays that kind of backup center role for the rest of the night, and then depending who you want closing the game on how Rudy's playing until Rudy gets up to minutes. And so you don't have the full crunch on everyone's minutes and involvement until the road trip, probably till we go to Chicago, would be my guess. And then you start getting into what's going to be a very difficult dance for Quinn Snyder on how you make sure that everyone's happy. The offense has been incredible. And the offensive rank is second in the last 11 games. 38% of the shots have been threes. 43% have gone in, which is a little high. Seven of the 11 games with four or more threes. Nine of the 11 games with an offensive efficiency of over 110. Now, they've only played one defense that's in the top 15 in the NBA in this span, and that was the Philadelphia 76ers, and they shut them down. So there could be a little fool's gold going on here. It's too hard to tell. They're 7 points above per 100 possessions what the average team would have done in those games. 7 points above in those matchups. So I think that they that is probably, you know, that still makes it pretty real, but they haven't done it against an elite defensive team yet, or high level defensive team would be the one area where I might keep a little note on some of it. Defensively, here's a really interesting and I think kind of exciting thing. During this stretch, interesting kind of period of time here. The Jazz have done some defensive things that I think are really interesting. One of which is they have played smart defense. Without Rudy, the Jazz allowed the fifth fewest shots in the restricted area, the ninth fewest shots, fewest amount of threes. Overall, they only allowed 61% of the shots from restricted or three. That's the fourth best smart defense in the NBA. What I mean by that is you're at least forcing a good shot selection. That's actually a lot better than it was when Rudy. The first 12 games, the Jazz were 14th in denying shots at the rim, 19th in denying three-point shots, and 17th best at having opponents shoot outside restricted or three. So they figured out something else defensively, is how to get the right shots from opponents. Now, when Rudy's in, the Jazz do a much, much better job of defending at the rim, right? So when Rudy plays, the opponent's field goal percentage at the restricted area is 59%, and when he was out, it was 66%. They go from 6 to 22nd. In the paint non-restricted, they're the number one team in the league at 31 to 41. And a corner threes, which usually means you're not having to help, the Jazz went from 31% to 49%. I think a little of that is luck. But it's still worth mentioning that. So what the exciting vision, I think, is maybe they figured out something defensively on how to force the right shots and who they're using defensively and how they're playing. And now you do it with Rudy and you get even better. Because you now are forcing people to take shots in the right places and you're capable of defending the other ones. To me, that's super, super exciting in so many ways. This is going to be a challenge. Rudy is not as offensively skilled as the work we've seen from Derek. Derek has been has proven that he is not only a starting center, but he's a top 15 starting center, maybe top 10, maybe higher. I mean, it's an interesting argument. Like, I know everybody loves Karl-Anthony Towns and Nikola Jokic. They don't defend at all. Like, they don't defend at all. They're both universally going to be accepted higher on the scale than that of Derek Favors. And I think that's probably right. But if Derek's healthy and playing the way he is right now, I'm not sure it's right. Right? Just in the sense that, like, when Derek is playing defense, he's playing defense at a higher level than them. Both those guys are terrible defensively. I mean, really terrible. And so I think that's at least worth noting. Today's show is brought to you in part by the Advocates. Matt, who runs the Advocates, a really interesting dude, lawyer. He's been doing this for 25 years. And, he joked a little bit when I met with him about, you know, his wife finally had to get him, you know, stop mumbling that they were injury attorneys. And, you know, the end goal for the Advocates is to be there for you, to help you. So his wife kind of said, like, let's stop being ashamed about this. We're helping people out. And what they've really done that's interesting is they've built a craft out of it. They have a 106-step process that the minute the accident starts, happens and you call and you have a lawyer that reaches you within 60 seconds, they then start their 106-step process. I got to be honest, I've taken a lot of things from the Lockdown Podcast Network from after meeting with Matt. Like that order and that structure, I mean, that's what we're trying to build right now in our Lockdown Podcast Network. It's a different game, but when you do something like that, you end up being efficient. And when you're efficient, you're productive. And when you're productive, you can have better communication and you're expediting the process and you get better results. And if I've just been in an accident and I want someone to do that for me, then that's who the Advocates are. The efficiency means productivity. Productivity, efficiency means communications. That means expediting the process. That means you're getting things done faster. You're getting them done better. And that's what these guys are able to do with their 106-step process. And if I got an accident, I want three things. Get me good results. Make sure nothing bad happens to me and treat me well. And that's what they're able to do. Each accident is different. Each process is the same. Each individual interaction with a customer is different, but each process is the same. And that's what the Advocates have built for you. The checklist of 106 steps to get you to the final result and make sure everything's covered, nothing's missed, and experts are doing each and every step. Call them at 801-355-5550. That's 801-355-5550. All right, NBA 5. Last night was fascinating. Minnesota is struggling with the LA Clippers without any of their guys, and Jimmy Butler just takes over. He goes for 20 of 22 points to close the game for Minnesota and single-handedly wins it for them. Jimmy Butler is keeping that team afloat. They're winning a lot. They do not look good. I am not comfortable with them. I may post something if I have time today at LockedOnNBA.com about what makes me not comfortable about them. It was a three-play sequence where they allowed three straight layups back to back to back. There's something to me that's not right about them, but you know what? They are 14-10, 11-4 in the conference. And they're getting by, and they're getting by because Jimmy Butler is just enough of an ass kicker that he's getting them by. And that's probably what is worth, you know, kind of giving credit there. Oklahoma City got a win last night. Scotty Brooks called it the best performance they had. San Antonio was closing with DeJounte Murray, Bryn Forbes, Derek White, Davis Bertans, and Brandon Paul, and pushed them to the wire. I am not sure that I thought it was that great a performance, but maybe Billy Donovan is just looking for some sort of confidence along the way. They had a blowout win on their hands that they let get back into it, and it began to move away. There are nine playoff teams right now for eight spots, if you include Oklahoma City, which you probably should. Jazz now go through this murderous December. Portland has suddenly lost two in a row, and they have a very similar kind of run through than the Jazz have. Coming up here, they have got a stretch of games that's going to be awfully hard on them. They came off that East Coast road trip, and you thought they were going to be all right. They got New Orleans on a back-to-back and lost. They got another break where they get Washington on the back-to-back here, and then they go through another stretch, and their offense is scuffling. Their defense has been elite, and it doesn't feel like that should be able to hold up long-term. Denver is 13-9. They have are playing without Jokic and Millsap and Chandler for a little while. They got a night win recently over the hapless Lakers, who are just terrible, and I'm not sure how good a coach Luke Walton is. That probably still needs to be proven to me. So it's interesting because there's three teams. Houston is great. We focused on it on Locked On NBA today on our biggest stories, local experts. They are great. Golden State and San Antonio. And then I almost feel like not only are there six teams battling for the next five spots, but I think there's six teams battling for the fourth spot. Denver, Minnesota, Portland, New Orleans, Utah, Oklahoma City, none of them have shown anything that says to me they're about to run to be the fourth team in the Western Conference. If the Jazz had been playing better opponents and on the same win streak, I think you could say that the Jazz maybe with Rudy coming back, but they've also played, you know, 14. We've played 14 home games, 9 road games. We're 2-7 on the road. We have not played against superb teams yet. And you know, I am a huge believer in winning games against bad teams, right? You've heard me talk about this having enormous value. I do think sometimes you look and see, like, well, who's playing well against teams that are above 500? And then nobody is. Houston's 10-3. The Warriors are 11-4. San Antonio's 6-5. Denver's 5-5. Minnesota's 6-5. Portland's 7-8. We're 7-7. New Orleans is 5-10 against above 500 opponents. That's a huge warning flag. And Oklahoma City's 7-8. Nobody is. Toronto's 10-3. Boston's 10-3. Cleveland's 7-4. Keep an eye on Toronto. Here they come. And Cleveland's now the number two team, I think. You know, that's shaking out as it should. Boston, Cleveland, Toronto, Detroit, Philadelphia, Milwaukee, Washington, Indiana. In fact, that's probably the playoffs. In fact, there's a real chance that both playoffs are set, depending on what happens with Oklahoma City. Wow, that's crazy. It always happens this way. Unless Miami gets hot. The Knicks Hardaway's hurt. Yeah. All right, that is Locked On Jazz Extended Edition with all the different stuff. Tomorrow we will do Time Travel Tuesday. So hope you enjoy that coming up. And we'll also give you a recap of the Washington game. We'll be live in Oklahoma City. Talk to you soon.